It's Monday, August 28th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 16 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and on the mics with us today we have Chad.
Hi.
John.
Hey.
And Adam.
Hey.
And this is our second take on this opening. Because on the first one, the mics were muted. Well, everyone except mine was.
Nobody would have noticed anyway.
Yeah, in my opinion, that'd be a better show.
We could have had Fear the Dan, but that might be a bonus episode for your spare time.
I want to remind everyone that we still have a con coming up in October we're going to be at, which is ArcCon, located here outside of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. So if you live in that area and you're able to stop by and say hi, please do. You can find information on that at ArcCon, ArcHonStl.org. And we're actually going to be putting together their podcast feed. And hopefully I will have a web address for that next week. I'm hoping to get that finished this week. I've actually already purchased the site, but if you go out there right now, there's nothing there. So,
right. What all are we going to be doing at ArcCon?
Quite a few things. I don't have the exact details yet, but they have tentatively said they want us to do... Well, actually, to tell you a little story here, this is very different than the reaction podcasters get at most conventions where they kind of have to pull teeth to get recognized. We sent out an email to ArcCon just saying, you know, hey, testing the water, do you guys want us to do anything? They got really excited about podcasting in general and all this new technology stuff and wrote back. And as of right now, they want us to do 3 panels, a workshop. They also want us to do general con coverage. And they are right now talking to all the different celebs and guests of honor and things like that to try and secure interview time so we can actually really get all around the back end of the con and meet and talk to everybody and give them what will hopefully be a really good feed. So this is going to be a great opportunity for us and hopefully a really good boon for the con as well. So if you, like I said, if you're in the area or you just are up for a drive that weekend, October 5th through 8th, please come on down, check out the con, and say hi to us. We'll be real easy to recognize.
Yeah.
3 or 4 guys walking around in Fear the Boot shirts with a studio mic, so won't be real hard to see us. There's a little bit of background noise in this episode. I apologize for that. We're normally kind of anal about that sort of thing, but my wife, Carla, right now, who normally watches the dogs while I do these episodes, is in South America visiting some of her extended family. So I have no one to watch the dogs, so they're down here chewing on little bones and such, and I'm sure you're going to hear that at some point throughout the episode. So I apologize now. Nothing we can do about it.
And we had to throw Adam a bone, too, so he'll gnaw on that occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the other sense of eating is that fat bastard Chad, this chow over there.
A man's got to eat.
Actually, the problem with you and the mice has never been eating. It's always
been... your raging coke habit.
Yeah, can't tell you how many of those we have to... Well, I say we, you edit the episodes now. So actually, Chad, you know how many of those you edit out every episode now.
It's an addiction.
A man's got to have blow.
All right, Chad, you want to give a real quick plug again for the WoW Guild, just for anyone that hasn't heard?
Yes, we have a World of Warcraft Guild, and it's on the Blackhand server. So you can do a /who fear the boot, and it's fear space the space boot. It's not all one word. And we can get you in. We'd really like to see you. We're growing day by day. We're always. It seems like we're getting about one new person every day, every other day.
Yeah.
So we're going pretty good. And so we're having a lot of fun on there, too.
Right. Alliance Side Blackhand server. If you can't catch us in the game, you can also stop by our forums on feartheboot.com. And we have set up a specific forum topic area or whatever exactly that's called, specifically for the WoW Guild. So you can stop by and say hi there as well.
Yeah. Put your name on there, and the officers will put you on our friends list. We'll find you. And, like, you know, we have all the typical guild recruitment stuff. We got Tabard, we got Vint Server, we got a website, we got all that. So, yeah, we're pretty functioning guild right now. Like I said, we're growing, and we'd love to see you on.
And even if you really don't care about World of Warcraft, I hope you will still stop by our forums or stop by and drop us an audio. We have a link for that off of our website, or drop us an email. Just come by and say hi. Tell us what you think of the show. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you love. Tell us what you don't like. So once again, that's at feartheboot.com.
I don't give half a crap about WoW, and I love the forum, so there you go.
Well, you and don't John's, anymore.
John's face is all over it, too.
That's right, it is.
Yeah,
there
actually,
is a substantial amount of John's face on that forum. There's never enough, but, you know, it approaches enough.
There probably are more pictures of John than anyone else.
Well, I'm the most beautiful. We do it by that ratio.
Who can argue with that?
Or at any rate, the most photogenic. I tell you, if I was to look at the bottom 10% of worst pictures of me on Earth. I swear that is what is up on those forums.
Aww.
I know.
We'll take you so down vain. To Glamour Shots and get you nice and pretty.
We'll get you that feather ruffled thing that the girls always wear.
Yeah.
Get you your prom haircut.
It's a boa.
This week also marks the first week in a really what's going to be a long series of contests we're doing. We've actually gotten a hold of, over the past several days, probably about a half dozen different prizes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Not just, hey, good job, you won prize, but an actual physical, we'll mail this to you prize.
Yeah, we can actually give you something real. And we came across a whole bunch of those, coincidentally, in 1 week. So what we are going to do is for about the next 6 weeks or so, maybe more if we get a hold of some more of these things, once a week we are going to kick off a contest, which we will conclude at the following week's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I realize we post these podcasts usually on either Monday or Tuesday. Our recording day is on a Saturday. So what we are probably going to have to do is say that these contests are going to run from whenever the podcast drops through that next Saturday, like noon central time.
Do you think we might have to run these for 2 weeks? I don't know. It depends on the response.
I don't think we need to. We'll see. I don't think we're going to need to, because for most of these, what we have in mind are not things that's going to take you real long to do.
Right.
I guess so. Well,
you know,
we do have some people listening to these podcasts in delay.
Right. There's a lot of people. Most people, I think, are two podcasts back behind us of what we're recording.
So, yeah, maybe we should run these at a 2 week delay instead of a 1 week delay.
Well, I tell you what, you know, this is our first podcast, our first contest, so this first one's going to be an experiment. We'll give it 2 weeks. We'll put a 2 week time limit on it. We'll see how that works for everybody.
Okay, so this is a show that we're recording right now that is intended for Monday, August 28th. Like I said, we actually record these on a Saturday, but this will drop Monday, August 28th.
So we hope.
So let's say we will run this contest from Monday, August 28th through noon central time on Saturday, September 9th. So you have from that Monday through, I'm writing this down myself so I don't forget this, through Saturday, September the 9th to get in your entry. And for this first couple of contests, what we're going to do is there is a website that sells gaming and kind of geek-related t-shirts. They have some funny ones on there.
They do.
Yeah, it's a nice site. It's a nice label.
We actually just ordered a couple for ourselves. You can go out and it's at geeklabel.com. That's GEEKLABEL, one word, geeklabel.com. And what we are going to be giving away for the next several weeks is $30 coupons for their site. We have little codes you can enter when you're checking out so you can get... It will probably work out to definitely one shirt free and maybe even another half of a shirt free if you want to get a second one.
Yeah, they're 18 or 20 bucks, I think.
Yeah. Maybe a couple baseball caps or something like that. Yeah,
right.
Different stuff there.
And these are $30 coupons, so you can use these however you want. And so here's the first contest. Based on the furor we have generated over the past two episodes, we've decided we're going to give you a chance to get your say in on something we've been talking about, and here's how. I want you to send us an entry for your best freak show character for a fantasy setting, okay, Dungeons and Dragons type setting. We're not given any particular setting, but if you want to make a well giant or a furry water elemental or whatever.
Or anything.
Yeah, anything.
The tall dwarf.
Not standard. I wouldn't say tall dwarf.
I don't know about the tall dwarf. I think we should definitely restrict PHB races hard and fast.
Okay, so no dwarves, no elves.
Human elf, half elf, half orc. Gnome, halfling, table.
No races that are in the standard player's handbook for Dungeons & Dragons.
What if you're like a lycanthrope, like a human werewolf?
I would accept that, because
that's freaky.
Yeah, same thing with vampire, something. It's a free show
if
character.
If you've got a freaky template like lich or vampire or lycanthrope, go ahead and fire away.
I think you can look at them
and say, goblin vampire is better than a human vampire, but I'll leave that to your creativity.
Because you can't roll up a vampire with the player's handbook. I mean, you could roll up a normal guy and turn him into a vampire, but you can't roll up a vampire in the player's handbook. So, once again, here's the rules. Player's handbook, Dungeons & Dragons, none of those races. We want a fantasy setting, freak show character. We do not want the stat sheet. I don't care about the stat sheet. Right. Anyone can write up numbers, all right? So a hill giant with a low strength, high intelligence does not count on that mark alone as a freak show character. What I want you to do is I want you to write up personality and background. And we are going to create a thread on our forums under the episode's
topic. How about we just run a contest thread?
Okay.
So right when they see it, that's right.
All right,
there.
We'll do that then. On our forums, we will create a contest topic area where you can go and put these entries. Once again, you have until noon on Saturday, September 9th, to get these into us. And what we're going to do is we'll look these over. We'll pick the best one we like. Just keep in mind word count. We, being just a couple guys who do this on the side, this isn't what we do for a living.
Yeah, my secretary's off for the summer.
Yeah, we don't have time to read through like 16-page write-ups. So we're going to put a hard and fast word count on this. If you break this word count, this word is where we're going to stop reading. So you have 500 words. Personality and background, no stat sheets, just 500 words of personality and background. If you want to know kind of what we're looking for, go out to our resources section and look at the sample player characters or character templates we posted for our Shadowrun game we did during our first several episodes. So go out there and look at those. That's kind of what we're looking for.
A question for you, Dan, on this contest.
Sure.
When they turn them in and we're sort of grading them or judging them, what are we looking for? Are we looking for the freakiest, weirdest character?
That's a
good
question.
Are we looking for the most interesting
freak
show?
We are looking for the most interesting one, because when we went off on our thing about freak shows, what we said, was that my concern is that people tend to use the freak show characters to bypass depth in favor of glitter or in favor of power. And I know there are exceptions to this. We have played freak show characters that were really, really neat characters. What we want you to do is to continue that trend of making freak show characters viable for our kind of games, and send us in a character who is deep and interesting.
And freaky.
Right,
but has more deep and interesting.
Freaky glitter is great, but interesting is more important. We would rather have a hobgoblin who we cared about than a gelatinous cube PC that didn't quite have much of a background.
Right. Speak for yourself, John Grannon.
There is a special place in my heart for the gelatinous cube.
Gelatinous cube is awesome.
Angioplasty can fix that, you know? But if you send us in a character that's funny, or you send us in a character that's just really, really, really completely out there, that's neat. You know, we may laugh at it or pass it around or enjoy it. You ain't going to win. We want to see depth. So if you send us in a gelatinous cube, yeah, you better have a really interesting gelatinous cube.
But that's Dr.
There's always
cube.
Room for gelatinous.
If I ever got a celebrity on this show, it wouldn't be Gary Gygax.
Oh, no, it'd be Bill Cosby.
It'd be Bill Cosby.
Absolutely.
That is the celebrity I want on this show.
If anyone has a connection with Bill, you know, please. Please milk him. You'll win all the contests if you can get him on Fear the Boot.
We don't want Gary. We don't want Monty Cook. Heck, we don't even, as much as I love the man, we don't even want Jordan Weissman. We want Bill Cosby. We're going to talk in this podcast about a couple things. We talked last time about long-distance gaming, said we were going to talk about it, and then didn't. So we are going to hit that. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, we have another topic we need to kick around. Mm-hmm. So, Chad, you get yourself all girded up, because this is one that you get fiery about.
Is it?
Yes, it is. Time travel in games.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That doesn't sound very fiery, Chad.
No, I kind of got screwed one time, but... All right, go on.
Okay. So, we are talking about games where either the whole party or some portion of the party is bouncing around through time, or even has... And I think this is probably the far extreme, has the capacity to time travel at will. They have some kind of time travel device. We're going to kick around whether, in our opinion, this is a good idea or not, and how to make this work if you're going to do it. So, Chad, go ahead and give your one opinion, which people will hold as the show's opinion, and tell us what you think about time travel.
Well, I think time travel is a neat thing to play with. But you have to set
in real life, right?
Absolutely. Life, yeah. I rolled up Dr. Emmett Brown, level 6 professional. He has 72 hit points.
He just hasn't gotten his horse over 80 yet.
Yeah, his land speed is 88 miles per hour.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a fun thing to play around with. My sour grapes with time travel, though, is that I was in a game that Dan, that you ran, and I had a time travel character, and there wasn't time travel inherently in the game. Is some sci-fi setting. I think it was one of our homebrew ones.
It was.
Yeah, and there was no time travel written into the setting, so I had to make up the rules of time travel. And I based a lot of my character, not personality, on time travel, but I based a lot of his history and some of his motivations on the fact that he was a time traveler, and that I made up the rules of the time travel. You know, like, you have to make up rules of time travel. You have to make up, you know, what causes a paradox, and can you meet yourself and have the world not explode?
What happens if you go back in time and shoot your grandma?
And shoot your grandma and that sort of thing. Right. So I had roughed out some of these facts and whatnot, And I was basing a lot of my character on this. And then I start running it three games in, Dan just throws it all out.
No, actually, that's...
that doesn't seem to be an issue.
This was not the plot of the game.
No, it was not the plot of the game. It's just that suddenly the rules of time travel, Dan got...
Right.
I don't mean to say that he was flipping about it. Dan, you started thinking about how the time travel would affect the game. And then you made changes, and they weren't bad changes.
Well,
they were just
couldn't
different
time
changes.
Travel. The plot of your character
he got
was
thrown
that,
through.
Was that we are way 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 out in the future? Something that I won't get into this partially because we don't generally like to
really
do gaming
boring.
Stories, but also because I'm still going to get you guys back into a more modernized version of this game. So I don't want to give away too much.
Of the plot. Basically, it was a scientist whose experiment went wrong and threw him back.
Well,
in the
past. It was intentional because in the future something really really bad happens to humanity. And so it's a last-ditch effort. You had sent yourself way back to try and stop it from happening.
Oh, my God, it's Earthbound. I love this game. Oh,
run
my God,
it
it's 4,400.
Yes. I love this show.
Well, okay, yeah, mind you, this was like 10 years ago.
Okay.
So this was not like yesterday.
Hey, so it was Earthbound.
And I never played Earthbound.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I never played it.
Beautiful. This was seriously like 10 years ago. His character goes back in time, and all he had was one item, which was a recall device to send him back home. That's all he had. And,
well, in clothes. I had pants.
Well, right. It wasn't an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
A naked character.
But I mean,
we're going to talk about it.
You could not time travel at will. It took like this huge facility to do.
Yeah,
the time displacer. The T-1000 did it.
Right. And the punchline at the end was that the time travel device didn't work, that something else had sent you back and was controlling you.
But, right.
Now, let's talk about something you said, because I think this is the first and most important pitfall when you're introducing time travel, is time travel raises a lot of questions that are very hard to answer.
And this is true of... Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is true of any sci-fi genre. It doesn't have to be movies, sci-fi books, sci-fi anything.
Right.
Not just role-playing games.
And we'll take for a moment, and you have to if you're going to make any coherency out of this, and you're allowing, let's define here, you're allowing backwards time travel. Forward time travel has a whole lot less problems to it. But if you allow backwards or multi-directional time travel, where you go forward and backwards, the first thing you have to throw out the window is chaos theory. That if you go back in time, simply your presence there, just standing on a street, causes a person to walk slightly to the right, which causes them to change their mind about something, which makes them not notice a shop, so they don't open a business, and they don't, therefore, get divorced.
And yada, 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 yada.
Yeah, yada.
Yeah. And Hitler won World War II.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's the whole butterfly's wings that causes a hurricane, that, you know, it slightly changes one tiny little wind current in one way, where it compounds and compounds and compounds and compounds, and you have a hurricane in Japan.
And you know why I don't think that you should do that? Is not for any organizational reason and not for any actual mechanic reason, but the reason is because none of that affects the player. You're a player, you're in that moment, you're playing the game. Who cares if Hitler won World War II?
Right, and
it doesn't affect you.
If they bounce back and forth,
you
could create an interesting game where they go back in time and they whatever, and that this when they go back, the future is completely different. I think that you could turn into a good game,
right?
But I think, for most people, that's not what they're trying to do. They
you
don't
can turn that into one good game.
Right.
Yeah, most people, I think, are trying to change one aspect of the past to come back and see everything the same. Marty McFly goes back, his parents are successful, but Ronald Reagan's still the president.
Right.
And everything else is
and
still in place.
He's still born and this, that, and the other. And that's... So I think you could introduce that, but a lot of that's not what most people are going for. Therefore, I'd say in most games, it's probably best to take it off the table.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, here's
take time travel as a whole.
No,
off the
no,
table,
no.
Just
take
chaos theory
off the table. Now, let's go into a second problem, which is a little bit more relevant and harder to work around, which is time paradox of some kind, where you go back in time and you shoot your grandmother and kill her when she's a young girl. Well, what happens to you? Well,
I love mother.
So you were never born. Because you were never born, you could never go back in time and shoot her. Therefore, she lived. Since she lived, you were born.
VCR, fast-forward, rewind thing.
And
then that doesn't make for a very good game, because it just goes on and on and on and on forever. And you know what? I actually played in a game like that.
Really?
Yes. It was awful.
It was like Groundhog Day?
Yeah. Well, and you know what it was? It was like, it was a fantasy setting. The time travel was magical.
Uh-huh.
The party got placed in the specific time.
Right.
And there was a battle going on. And the bad guy at the end had a orb that destroyed time. And so when he dropped the orb, time was destroyed, which caused a paradox, which caused us to go all the way back to the beginning of the first game and do it all over again and try and do it different. and you did it about, we did it about five times.
Wow.
The player characters fled through the desert.
How amazingly boring.
Hey. Oh, you have no idea, sir. It was awful.
Who was running this?
I don't want to get into it.
Okay.
It wasn't me.
Was it anyone sitting here?
No one in
nope.
this room.
Okay.
No.
You know, it sounds like that could be cool if, like, when you read a time, it was different somehow, that, like, you could change.
No, it wasn't different.
But if you just replay it. This is like getting to the end of the Temple of Elemental Evil. At the very bottom, it says see page one.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Just add a zero behind the hit dice for all the monsters and do it again.
It's like Donkey Kong. Hell yes! I love that game.
Paradox, I really think there's only a couple ways to get around it. One is just somehow stop the players from doing it, but you can't do that without
controlling
the characters.
Yeah, there was a Twilight Zone episode about this. The guy went back to shoot Hitler, but time wouldn't let him. He accidentally caught this one in a million chance and got distracted or whatever.
Actually, that was one of the things we had done with your characters.
Yeah.
We said in his background, he had tried to do things like he would smash
Paradox, we did
a vial, and like he'd go back in time and try to stop himself from smashing the vial, but
that caused me to smash it.
Somehow that would cause you to smash the vial, so time fulfilled itself.
Yeah, what we were saying is that if you go back in time to cause an event, that event, what you did when you go back in time, is already history.
And therefore, it's right.
You are just fulfilling what has already happened.
Right, because see,
and that worked out
well. And
that's
another paradox. You go back in time to stop Hitler from doing the Holocaust. Hitler never did the Holocaust. Therefore, you were never motivated to build a time machine to go stop him.
Right.
And once again, you get that same kind of ridiculous paradox.
Yeah.
I think really one of the few ways you can make backwards time travel work is to have a huge suspension of disbelief.
Oh, yeah, you got that major fudge factor.
You've got to just say that your perspective on time is constant, that your mind always moves forward, even if time's moving backwards. Mm-hmm. So even if the Holocaust is averted, you still remember it, even though it never occurred in the first place. And
or what you can do as a GM is make it more of a setting thing. You go back in time, but you're talking about the monolithic, huge events of history that your six players just really aren't going to have a big effect on.
Yeah, that you go back time and do little things.
Little things, yeah.
And I know, of course, I'm expecting people to start writing in all their kind of weird quantum philosophies on time that, well, if you go back in time, you would remember the Holocaust because what you've created is a different time stream.
Yeah, there's different time threads.
And I realize there's a reason why we wanted Bill Cosby on this show and not Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a storyteller's perspective here. I don't care what your quantum philosophy on time is. We are talking about a storyteller's perspective, not.
Yes.
This is why I am totally against time travel in games in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't like Chrono Trigger?
I agree with you. I think
you give me Chrono Trigger, we'll be fine.
All right. Give me Chrono Trigger.
I'm with you, Adam. My view on it is that it can work. I've seen time travel work out well in a few games, but there are so many questions. There are so many potential problems. There are so many what ifs and holes that opens that you are treading on very, very dangerous water.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Another example, and this is not a paradox issue, but this is an abuse issue. Let's say
I could abuse time travel all day long.
Let's say I go out right now here, modern day Earth. I get several thousand bucks and I go out and buy an amount of gold. Okay. I then time travel back to when my bank was first open, or a bank was first open that's still open today, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, or however far back. I'm sure there's banks in Europe that go back further than that.
It's the sports bet theory.
And I invest that piece of gold into the bank. And all of a sudden I come back in the future and assuming they haven't just swept away the records by then, here's my piece of gold now worth billions and trillions of dollars in interest.
Or you go back and you know who won last year's Super Bowl.
Right.
So you go back in time and you just make a big old bet on it.
Pretty much the way I would say is if you have ever seen Back to the Future trilogy, all the things you have asked yourself while you're sitting there watching these movies, like, why didn't he just do this? And, well, how's that even possible? These are the kinds of questions in an RPG you have to answer.
Right.
There's no script. Because you can't guarantee the characters are just going to follow the script, ask no questions, and do nothing unexpected.
Well, and you also have to know your players, too. If you have a type of players who are going to do the sports bet, you give them time travel, and they're going to go back, and they're going to try to exploit it, maybe you shouldn't do time travel. But if you have a type of players where you can say, hey, guys, I want to do a time travel thing, just don't avert World War II or just use it to make money and let's just have a game with it. And if you think the players will be cool with it, I think you have more leeway.
Don't abuse me.
You know, yeah. This isn't a role-playing game, but that was something I thought was done very well, at least in the intro of Command & Conquer Red Alert, whether you like the game or not.
I love that game.
Yeah, where the guy went back in time.
It was Einstein. Albert Einstein popped Hitler on the street.
Right, kills Hitler in the street to avoid World War II and the Holocaust and all those things. And the end result is, well, now nobody ever checked Stalin's growth or got America out of its isolationism. Mm-hmm. And the result is Russia takes over Europe.
Wow.
And America just kind of sits there drumming its fingers. You know, I like the fact that they did that. I think time travel can work within a game, but it has to work. Let me give some advice on how I think you can make it work. Once again, assuming it's backwards. If you're time traveling forward, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You go forward and whatever.
You visit the future and, ooh, flying cars.
Yeah, flying cars.
And yeah, Back to the Future too.
The year 2000.
So, first of all, you've got to set some boundaries on what can and can't be done. I think, secondly, you have to ask yourself what the limits of this are going to be. Can they time travel repeatedly? It's like they can go back in time once and stop. Mm-hmm. Is this going to be like that Simpsons Halloween episode where you have to keep going back in time and then back to the future to see what happened and bouncing around until finally you get a reality you want where it rains donuts.
It rains donuts. All his kids are perfectly well behaved.
Except they have his lizard tongues or something.
Yeah, close enough.
This is not a Simpsons podcast, but...
Well, you know, Sliders did that, too.
Oh, I love Sliders.
Oh, John
Sliders,
Davis.
They kept jumping around, and they were trying to get home and whatnot. Well, finally, they jumped to this one place where, oh, my God, they're home, and they're celebrated. You know, they were missing, and now they're home, and they tell their stories, and, oh, yes, it's great, and you're rich and on talk shows and stuff, and everything seems normal, everything's great, you are back home, and then... Mid-episode, they look out over San Francisco Bay, and the Golden Gate Bridge isn't golden. It's like purple or blue or something.
Yeah.
And that's the only difference. It is the only difference in the entire world is that the Golden Gate Bridge is not the right color. And then they had this thing. It's like, is this the reality we want to stay in?
it was this
back and forth thing. And then in the end, they're like, you know, this isn't Earth. This isn't our Earth.
I think one of the hardest things to do with this, as we talk about this, as one other piece of thing on how to make this work, also know the intentions of your characters. In addition to knowing the bounds of how often they're going to do it and what the purpose of it is, understand also the intentions of your characters. Are they going to go back and abuse this? But I was going to say that I think if you can make this work pretty well if you really, really narrow down what's going to happen. Like with Chad's character in my game, he was able to travel backwards in time once.
Mm-hmm.
And then all he had was a return device. He couldn't alter the past, you know, or he was trying to against all odds, even though his experience had shown it wasn't possible. I mean, humanity was getting destroyed. There was no other way out of it. That he had to try.
Yeah, because that was the whole tragic thing of the character is that he knew he couldn't actually change history, but he went back in time to try and do it anyway.
Right. You know, and that worked out pretty well. My fear is that if you open up the floodgates on this, that really, where you just allow all kinds of bouncing around time and all kinds of hands-on activities, I think quickly one of two things is going to happen to your game. Either you are going to have such an inconsistent reality to it that either, number one, the game's going to degrade pretty quickly and after a few games fizzle out.
Right.
Or secondly, you have the type of characters that are so into the storyteller format of games, if you say, well, this is the way it worked out, they're not really going to ask why, and they're not really going to try and use that understanding of why to further affect things to their own goals, that you just say, it's a Back to the Future thing. Will you come back to the future, and despite all the paradoxes you caused and problems you caused, it's just the way it was, and they're not going to ask why. And I think if you take it from that approach, you could make it work.
Yeah. How do you feel about a non-sci-fi time travel thing?
You know, honestly, I can't say I really have a defined opinion simply because to me, this is purely for just patterns in writing. It's just, I've never really thought about it.
Yeah, like medieval knights going forward to modern day.
I'll say this, every time someone says time travel, almost without fail, the first thing you think of is a guy with a great big device with blinking lights who pulls a lever and he's back somewhere else. But yeah,
I think of a DeLorean.
Yeah, I think of a DeLorean too.
But well, there you go. There's your device with blinking lights. Yeah. It's a DeLorean. Yeah. Well, it's not a knight who walks into a magic cave and ends up in the 31st century.
I think Arthur Clarke wrote that story.
You have Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee King Arthur's Court.
That
I actually just read that book about 6 months ago.
But that was more of a satire.
That was, but it had the same thing. It had time travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, and this is kind of a case in point, so I'm going to develop this. I think he created damage he couldn't undo.
Right.
Because the method of time travel, he never really explained. He just has the guy gets knocked unconscious and wakes up in King Arthur's court. Mm-hmm. And he does an enormous amount of stuff to change history.
Yeah, he invents, like, production lines and does the Industrial Revolution.
Kills, at the end of it. I apologize, I'm ruining the book for anyone, but kills, like...
Spoiler warning.
Kills, like, thousands of knights at the end of the story. At the very, very end, like in the last couple pages, for no particular reason, the Catholic Church comes in, shuts him down, erases every last vestige of his technology into the ether. I don't know what they did with it, but just poof, it's gone.
Popely magic.
And then, yes. And then Merlin, who through the whole book has been demonstrated to be nothing more than a charlatan who has no real magic, and he's just made a fool of him again and again and again because he's just nuts. He's not magical. Suddenly whips out an actual magic spell and puts the guy to sleep. So he sleeps for like 1,000 years or whatever until he's back at the normal time. And it was like...
Maybe Twain just got bored of the book and wanted to end it.
It was such...
Mark Twain. He did that more than once.
It was such deus ex machina. It was such... I don't think he could undo what he wrote. So, and that's, I think, the danger in role-playing games, is you can create more damage than you can undo.
Right.
Yeah, I think if you really have got the hankering to go back and forth in time and skip all over the land and go nuts, you should probably pick up Chrono Trigger. It's a great, 20-hour game, but don't do it on tabletop because it would get ugly.
It's dangerous.
I think that you can make a good campaign, a standalone time travel campaign, where you don't do the movie Time Bandits, but you do something akin to Time Bandits, or you do Turtles in Time or something like that.
Oh, yes.
I think where you bounce from time period to time period with specific goals and such, and then there's a beginning and an end to it. Eventually, if you run one of these mega multi-year time travel campaigns, I would think that eventually you would weave such a tangled web of paradoxes and questions that the players and yourself can't really suspend the disbelief anymore. That you just have this huge mess. Whereas if you have a beginning and an end,
right.
you can make more sense.
Of course, even then, if your players go off the beaten path, it's not like a normal plot thing where if they go off the beaten path, okay, you just let them go to this town and have the plot follow them. They've just killed Hitler. this is not a little thing to undo.
Right.
I guess you could treat that individual action as a plot off the beaten path. Okay, they shot Hitler, and right then something happens where Hitler doesn't die.
Well, Heinlein had
it hits the book in his pocket or something instead of his heart.
Heinlein did a lot of things with time travel, and he had multiple groups. There were like good guy groups and bad guy groups who were using time travel against each other and stuff. And it would be like the good guy group goes back and kills Hitler, and then the bad guy group goes back and saves Hitler. That's not something you want to do in your campaign.
No, you hit this point of absurdity so why doesn't the bad guy group just go back and kill the guy that founds the good guy group when he's a baby in the crib?
The good guy group would go back and then they had these like supercomputers, each group, that would like predict chaos theory outcomes different things.
A Mind Forever Voyaging. Sexiest text-based game ever. You're a computer who does exactly that.
Who just predicts like...
Chaos theory, effects of this socialist plan on the state, and it's a mess, but... Its political backers want to provide it and keep it protected, so you have to undo them. Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I guess another example of a way you could make this work was the old show was a Quantum Leap, where you really have no control over it. And I realize in Quantum Leap, he was different people, not different places, but it'd be like you just kind of get poofed to a point in time, have very little control over what it is you're doing. And
as a player, I don't like that because you're a victim of the plot.
Now, I agree with you, but this would almost get into another bigger debate, which is the storyteller game, the game where the players really do very little except bear witness to the plot. And I personally am against it, but I know a lot of people that really love storyteller games.
Well, I'm sure that there's a Creative Commons or open source Quantum Leap role-playing game out there somewhere.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's about it for time travel. I think we've kind of beat this one. So let's go ahead and move on to from time to space and distance now.
Oh, you know what? I would also like to add in something we should have done earlier before the time travel episode.
What's that?
Before we go into
let's go back in time and correct
time
podcast.
Travel back for
yeah. Pretty much this is what
we're
doing.
Of course, we can time travel. We just scroll Audacity backwards about half an hour.
Well, then we'd kill this brilliant pun we just made.
Yeah.
We can't do that.
Say your piece. Adam actually has a story that isn't related to gaming advice or anything.
Yeah, that's a good story.
We
this
forgot
was
to
a good story.
It.
Oh, I hate telling stories.
Go ahead, Adam. This is a great story, though.
Yeah.
This is not a gaming story, either.
Not a gaming story, not an advice story.
This is a shocking story in my life. I went on a job interview on Thursday. And, you know, normal job interview BS. I come in, he says, you know, you go through the motions of him telling you, blah, 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 this is what we're looking for. And you, typical boring professional stuff. So, about midway through, he looks at me and he gets this look in his eye. Like, he's got a question I'm actually going to be interested in. So he says, hey, what's your favorite beer? And I'm taken aback. But there is only one true answer here. So, of course, I respond with, well, Bud Light is the beer of champions, of course. So
you're
he
fired.
Says, yeah. You don't get the job, jerk. No, so then he says, oh, I know. I give him the quizzical eye. What do you mean, you know? Oh, well, I just listened to the last episode of Fear the Boot. You what? Yeah, the goodbye episode to John.
And now, huh? When the company you're working for hears that you were interviewing out, they're going to fire you.
No. So. Yeah, you know what? I haven't told them.
Not only will Fear the Boot get you that job, it will cost you your current one.
No.
It giveth and it taketh away.
So go on, tell the punchline of the story. Why he was listening to Fear the Boot?
Well, it was on my resume.
Yeah, and he said he brought it in. Was it now? Like, turns out this whole consulting company, like everyone in there for some reason is like a gamer.
Yeah, they all play WoW. You said they all play WoW.
Yeah,
they all
have
stuff.
WoW accounts. And he's like, hey, you guys. He brought it out to the guys. Like, you guys listen to this, and they all listen to it. And
yeah, I guess
reviews.
They liked it. So
yeah. See, now like this
Hi, guys.
Office is listening to Fear the Boot.
Yeah, hey, dude. Yeah. You need a lawyer in 5 years. I'll be out of school.
You know, we need to start an at-work network.
What's that?
Haven't you heard like on a radio station where like they have an at-work network where like if you this is the radio station you choose to play over the speakers at your company or like all the girls on the floor listen to it or whatever, then they'll like give you perks or prize packages like company lunches and things like that. So we need like a Fear the Boot at-work network where like if you play this throughout your company, then
oh yeah, I can just imagine like a major company like Ross Furrier
or
something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Place Fear the Boot 24 hours a day.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd work there.
I would too.
Heck, even if it wasn't our podcast, I'd still have to work there just to hear gaming podcasts 24/7.
No, it's gold. It's Soundwave gold. That's what it is.
Yeah.
At the law firm of Crane, Grana, and Pania, nothing but Fear the Boot will be played all day long.
That's right. Who's the Crane?
Crane is William Shatner. He is Denny Crane, the star of Boston Legal. A show that came out the gates.
Crane.
Great, strong humor, great characters, and has gradually become David E. Kelly's political soapbox to the point where I can't even watch it anymore. But it was fun while it lasted.
I generally agree with him, and I can't even watch it anymore.
Yeah, you agree with his politics, I disagree. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
He beat you over the head with him so hard, you can't even look at it.
I'm the same way. That's one of the reasons why, and it's a huge tangent here, but that's one of the reasons why within this podcast, I mean, the two topics that are just forbidden is politics and religion. That's why on the forums, the two topics is politics and religion, because I hate people that turn entertainment into a soapbox, which is what I'm doing right now. I'm soapboxing about soapboxing. Yeah. So let's move right along.
Yeah, let's do that before we get into an argument.
Before my hypocrisy gets so deep that I... the subject we had brought up last time, but had never fully developed, was long-distance gaming. Actually, fully developed. We didn't talk about it at all.
Right.
We just brought it up, and that was as much as we developed.
We said we were going to talk about it, and then we didn't talk about it.
All right, so by long-distance gaming, we've got a whole bunch of different types here, but we'll give one example here to start off with. Well, let me explain this real quick. It's anything where you are gaming with people that are not physically with you, all right? And we're not talking about one person. I don't mean you have three guys sitting around a table and one guy phones in. I'm sure this has happened, but this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about, like, for example, number one, play-by-forums. Has anyone sitting here ever done a play-by-forum RPG?
I have.
Nope.
No, but I'm against it.
I have, and I'm against it.
Oh, clearly that's official Fear the Boot position.
It is the official Fear the Boot position.
No, it's the official position of the northern side of the room. I have played one briefly. It was only went for a couple of weeks. This was a long, long time ago. John, can you tell us about your experience on the forums? What was the game and how long did it go? Before we get into whether you liked it or not, what was the game and how long did it go?
I played a D&D game that remained consistent with Monday, Wednesday, Friday posts from the DM and however many the PCs wanted to post, so long as they clarified what their action was going to be on that turn or whatever. It rolled on schedule for probably 3 or 4 months. So we got a couple levels in. We got a few plot points done. We got into our characters. And then it just kind of tapered off and stopped. The DM didn't feel like it anymore, so...
Okay, so this one for a pretty good long while.
Yeah.
Was this the only play-by-form game you've done, or have you done a bunch of these?
I've tried a few more, but they generally haven't even got off the ground before either half of the PCs or the GM vanish into thin air.
Right.
And thus it's over.
Okay. Adam, you said you have not done this yet?
No.
Okay. I have done two. They were both... I said one. I've actually done two now that I think about it. They were both very brief. One was a fantasy game, very, very generic, and the other one was a Battletech game. But once, and it was more centered on mech warrior, because obviously you can't do mech combat via the form. It'd like take forever to do.
Yeah.
So it was just more like you just kind of story tell and roll a few dice to handle the mech combats. Neither of them lasted very long. Problem number one I saw with them, what you described, it's hard to keep. You have this real consistent schedule. If somebody doesn't get on and post their turn, you know, you've got this big gap now in the game. And I can say, well, you just game around them and keep on going. But what if that person's the GM?
Yeah.
You know, or what if you have one guy who's real critical to the party for some mechanical reason who just, he's gone for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
The standing rule I've seen DMs do is if you don't get a post up, no one takes your character for you. He just sits there stammering for a turn and for no reason stops dead in his track. And while that's a pretty good deterrent for absenteeism, it sucks when it actually happens because it doesn't make any sense. It breaks the flow of the game. It breaks the balance of the party.
Basically, the person just has a seizure for the next couple of hours.
Yeah, the next 6 seconds in a round or whatever it is.
One of the other things I never liked about it is the fact that it's so heavily turn-based that a major action occurs and you have to do a write-up kind of responding.
You don't role-play by turns.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, it's not like you can't have a back-and-forth conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you can't have these rapid-fire actions and responses. You put up a few paragraphs, and the GM responds with, this is what happened in a few paragraphs back. So I think that kind of takes some of the edge out of it. One of the good things I would say about play-by-forum, and I think this, in my mind, is the role for it. And I realize some people may really enjoy this, so...
Well, they're very popular.
There's
whole
they are. They,
websites and forums
right, they are.
Devoted to this.
I want to come back to that in a second. But I guess one of the first things I would say is good about this is the fact that it allows you, first of all, to continue role-playing if you need that fix and you don't have access to anyone who role-plays.
Right.
Or your favorite group or favorite people are all over the nation or all over the world. But I guess let's kick that around for a second. I know what you're saying, that there are whole sites out there dedicated to this. This is something that, while we're not into it, is very popular. Why is that? What is it you think that people get out of this that keeps it going?
Oh, I know. Scheduling is hard. Even for like a role-playing game, 5 or 6 people to meet at a given time on a given week.
We have to
block out
our current game for the next month
because
of it.
Yeah, right. It's straight accessibility, whether you're looking at time or location. It has both, especially forums.
I guess also maybe if you just want people, you just can't get enough. That the same way, like, there's people who sit at home all night watching the football game, and then they go to work and play their fantasy football game and read ESPN's website and this, that, and the other. I guess in the same way, you get somebody who has their RPG at night, and they just love it so much that they'll accept a forum game as a way to kind of fill that gap.
And also, you can do it with... It's so easy to pick up. You can just do it with anybody. You know, it's like maybe in your hometown of St. Louis, there are only X number of gamers that we have here. There's only a limited pool, even of a city of a couple million people. You have the whole world on the internet.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's some guys in the forum who want us to join some online gaming forum.
Well, yeah, on our forums, they've tried to start it up a couple times. It just hasn't, like, clicked yet.
You know what? I think Chaos was trying to do that.
He was. Someone else was, too. I can't remember the guy's name, but somebody else was trying to start up a play-by-forum game on ours. It just
didn't click.
Yeah. And I think, I guess, part of the problem is one of the reasons I wouldn't do that is I'm on such an information overload as it is. It's like, I don't have time to do it.
Yeah, me neither. But like you were saying, Chad, I agree. I think pound for pound, I know I've met more gamers on the internet than I have in real life.
Oh, yeah.
And I think in today's gaming climate, almost everyone has.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily a thing about the internet, but gamers tend to be like-minded and you gravitate towards the same centers. Like,
exactly.
Right. Like, you're into Penny Arcade. Well,
so there's
95% of other gamers out there.
Right. I mean, finding the two of you, Chad and Adam, at a grocery store was
that is
totally
atypical.
Needle in a haystack luck on my part, and online it's not luck.
You know,
I guess
that's true. If I was to think about people I've been friends with who were gamers, probably over the course of my entire life, I have had maybe, even if we just count acquaintances, maybe 20 people.
Yeah, that's what I'm
But
saying.
In 4 weeks, or not 4 weeks, in about, rather about 16 weeks since this podcast has started, through Fear the Boot, I now know 110 that are on the forum.
Yep.
And we don't know ours.
And even more than that,
who
are listening to us, and different people who run their own podcasts and stuff.
Right, who've talked
who've
to
become
us.
Become our friends and whatnot through the whole community.
I'd say, and probably through that extended network of people listen to our podcast, other podcasters we know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably 500, 750 people.
Yeah.
Look at the area, too. Right.
For all the way from China, all the way to London and Europe.
And Buffalo.
And Buffalo, New York.
Wonder who's there. And then all the way down to Australia. I mean, yeah, we got people all over the world. And heck, it's funny because since we started the podcast, we've even had people who live not that far from us who just happen to run into the podcast.
Yeah.
People we may have passed in the grocery store 100 times before and never known who they were.
Yeah, they were at my party last Saturday. We had five or six booters. It was a great time.
Yeah, it was. Let's move from forums to phone. Have you ever heard anyone or heard of anyone doing a role-playing session over the phone?
I could see it done, but
you'd have to have a speakerphone at that.
Yeah, obviously
I think you'd have to have Ventrilo or Skype.
I don't know about that.
No, you could
turn on the speakers.
I'll say, or you could even if everyone just had a handset, you could just do a conference call.
Yeah, you know what? I am less hesitant to do a phone-in simply because I can't do the forum because in 30 seconds of talking, you will communicate more than in 6 pages of writing.
Right.
Everything you write has no emotion behind it,
mm-hmm.
and it will be misconstrued almost every single time.
You know, also, you get the ability to do a rapid-fire exchange.
Yeah.
That I can say, well, I walk into the general store. Well, it's locked because he's not there. Whereas on forums, I wrote...
Oh, yeah, two days later.
Yeah.
Oh, the door's locked. Crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Your action ended.
I just assumed I got in.
Yeah, after I've written like 3 pages of what I did in the general store.
Well, you know what? I'm sure that... I mean, we're not really big forum players. I wonder if there's like techniques that they use to get around
to do this sort of thing. I've got to think that as many people as do this, there's probably a science to this we're missing.
Right. Well, and there's got to be understandings within that community.
Yeah, there are, Chad. The way I played it, which actually worked very well, is we had contingencies. We had, okay, I do this. If this, then that.
If
the door's locked,
I'm
going here. If the door's unlocked, I'm going to spend my room right around circling around. Now, that wasn't perfect. There were some cases in which 3 or 4 contingencies were written out and everyone failed, and so the character didn't really know what to do.
Had another seizure.
But yeah, had another seizure, but these were rare.
Now, let's kick out another possibility. And this one I actually came pretty close to doing, never did. There are a couple little applications or websites where you can play a game over the web. For example, one that comes to mind, I think it's called WebRPG.
It is.
And what it is it's a little program runs on a web page where you have a tabletop where you can, like, have your character sheet, you can, like, roll dice, you can move little figs around a map, and you can conduct a full role-playing game over the web. Because if you think about it, if you play by phone, the biggest thing you're missing is the ability to show things, to show dice being rolled, to show character sheets, to lay out maps. Whereas if you play on this WebRPG thing, especially, I don't know if it has a voice feature, but even if it doesn't, you could supplement this with Ventrilo or TeamSpeak or something, get a voice element in there, and you could play a full RPG over this tabletop. And actually, where I came kind of close to doing this was many years ago when I was still living out of state. I was thinking about trying to start a remote game with a couple of my friends back here in the St. Louis area that was going to use WebRPG.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it. But I'll have to say that of all the remote gaming methods I've seen, this one to me seems like the best way to go.
Yeah,
I can see myself doing something like that.
Now, I had a friend in college, SMSU, back before I went to Vatteron, who he had a buddy who was in this gaming group where one of the guys had a laptop set up. And one of the members in the gaming
group... Ooh, a laptop in 1992.
One of the members...
200 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, and they had... webcam and everything.
Wow!
And
he must have had a 56K!
You are feeling saucy.
I know, aren't
you? Jeez.
Okay, what's up, Chad?
So anyway, the guy was like, what is it called, agoraphobic?
Yes.
a shut-in. He was a shut-in.
Right.
He was afraid to leave his house and that sort of thing. But apparently the guy had some money anyway. Set up a laptop, and they played by webcam. And they set up the laptop at the table. They rolled dice for him, and he was able to say his bit and do his video and do all that stuff.
That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And now I want to do it.
I think the reason in my mind that a web-based role-playing game would work better than some of the other methods is because you always seem to lose something. Like, you play by form, you lose the instantaneous reactions. You lose the point-counterpoint. If you play by phone, you lose the ability to see things. But it seems like if you can somehow do, like, a voice-over IP or a chat client, to stick on some kind of a web application where you can have a tabletop, you know, I guess really outside of the fact that I have friends here in the area who I enjoy being with and gaming with, I mean, if I had to move away again for some reason, this is probably what I would do.
I don't know. To me, gaming is a social thing.
I agree.
Sitting around the table with people or couches. I like looking at people. I like doing the hand motions and the facial expressions. Well, yeah. And, you know, I like getting, as a game master, I like getting that reaction out of people. I like dropping bombs on people and seeing the look on their face and stuff. Social dynamic. The sounds, the sights, the everything.
The smells.
Okay. The smells.
The smells.
All right. I'm gonna take out one here that I think this is probably going to go on for quite a while. So if this podcast runs over an hour, this is the reason why. I could be wrong.
Go for it.
Role-playing in an MMO.
Oh.
We hit that a little bit in our bonus episode.
We did a little bit.
We haven't released yet.
All right. What if... Yeah, I'm going to release that this coming week. That was my bad. Well, I was going to actually release it on... like Thursday night, Friday morning, but I went into VNC to release it, and my VNC license had expired. So.
Oops.
Okay, so we're going to have to try that again.
Fear the license office.
Yeah, it's fear the $30 fee is what it is. So, role-playing in an MMO, and I guess we could take this from two angles. Angle one is the less likely one, that you and your RP buddies hop on an MMO server specifically to role-play. And that's actually kind of an unusual, but you know, you could do it because you can roll dice and...
Yeah.
You know, we've done that.
And I'm not talking how to role-playing guild. I'm talking like, you want to play D&D.
Hijack an MO to
so
play.
Jump on WoW to have dice and get in a party.
You want to play Forgotten Realms.
Oh.
So you hop on WoW, hijack an obscure corner of a town, and
sit around the table and...
No. Even like...
Well, you can do
sit
that.
Sit by the laughing troll in Orgrimmar.
Yeah, like...
Every time he laughs, you take a drink.
Or like, you know, you want to have combat, and I say, okay, there's a goblin here, and you do a slash roll 1 through 6, you know, and roll your damage, and we actually run a pen and paper RP using MMO as your way of kind of conducting the game, your medium for the game. I have never heard of anyone doing this. I can see it as possible.
Well, basically,
my comment. We've never done this.
Yeah, all you would get out of that is a dice roller, and you can get it on an AIM client in an instant messenger chat room. So there's really no point unless you just love looking at your female night elf rogue's butt. Hi, Dan. I see that smile on your face.
I do not know. I have no female night elves.
Just that he's willing to admit with.
Yeah. Now, the other possibility is you get on a dedicated RP server, or you have an RP guild, which most RP MMOs out there have one. We know WoW has them, EverQuest has them, I believe EverQuest 2
it
has
does.
Them.
It does, I tried it.
Okay, yeah, let's put this back out here. All right, we've done this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's the ups and downs of this?
Well,
The ups are few and far between.
let's say the world was a perfect place. I think it would be interesting, because I would love to see role-playing character depth mixed into an MMO.
I'd love it, too. And you know what?
Because
that's a great concept.
Well, especially since a lot
Somebody
of these games...
Somebody needs to send that concept into these MMO makers, because you know what? They're not down with
it.
No. Well, especially because a lot of these games, for example, WoW has the ability, has all kinds of little silly items like flowers and civilian clothing. You can sit in chairs. Things that have no specific game function but have a roleplay function. Anarchy Online took that even a step beyond, and you had the ability to decorate your house. They even had dance clubs, and like, dance was not an emote. You actually had dance moves and different dances you could do and such.
I submit that these guys are digging up artifacts that were already there rather than innovating. This crap was in Ultima Online, and that was in the MUDs before it.
Let's see here why this never works. I would say, I can think of two reasons this doesn't work, and I want to see what you guys can add to
these.
One,
laziness.
Dan, what do you got?
I would say number one is hecklers. That's the first biggest problem. People that get on these games with the sheer intention of just being obnoxious.
I remember when we used to play a Shadowrun mush, text-based, online, and it was role-playing. There was combat in it, but it was primarily role-playing. I think I was in two combats in the months I was on that thing. And we would go to a bar all the time, and it'd be full of people and all kind of role-playing, and then some dude made a character, and then he starts doing all these emotes about how he presses a button, and the computer gives him a taco, and he's like, thank you, computer. And he does this, he computer, beam me up, I'd like another taco. And we're like, what?
Bob shoots the lasers out the eyes, and you die!
Pretty much. And it was just like, we actually had to call in GMs who would come in and observe the behavior and was like, okay,
you're out. One of the biggest problems is in a mush or a mud, you have a very small environment, a small class size, so to speak. The problem is in these MMOs, you need someone to police these kinds of guys that are disruptive, and they can't. They can't police millions of people.
Well, there's one way to self-police them if you have the right sort of server, and that's to kill them.
Right.
I was in an orc roleplay guild for a very long time in Ultima Online that was very, very successful, called Shadow Clan, shadowclan.org if you're interested. And
people are running to that.
Yeah, people are playing Ultima Online. Anyway, we would have the dudes come out, and we would just walk out in our heavy infantry formation and kill them, because we could. I mean, there was no restricted PvP. We could kill each other if we wanted to, and we did. But if you play an alien culture, so-called, orcs, elves, or whatever, and you just regard humans as the scum at the bottom of the barrel, then it doesn't matter to your character whether they're talking in dude speak or with their Scottish LARPer accent. If you kill them all, it's fine.
The second problem, I think, that disrupts these games, these RPs and MMOs, is grinding. Because when you're sitting around a inn, you can roleplay pretty well. You can think of things to do. You can come with neat backgrounds for your character, so on and so forth. In fact, we had this problem in City of Heroes. We had characters that had really, really neat backgrounds and really neat personalities.
But that doesn't mean anything.
Well, what can you do while you're beating up thugs again and again and again, and you're grinding Skolo, and the fact is, the thing that's most IC for you to do would wipe the party, or you're so tired of saying, in the name of the gods, I damn thee, every time you throw an attack spell. I think this quickly degrades.
I think grinding is exactly it. The fact that there's no way to advance without beating up mobs over and over again is the epidemic. The thing that had UO, the thing that had the MUDs, was the viability of non-combat play. And I think roleplay springs from that in a way that it simply can't in mob bashers.
You can even see this in tabletop games. What are the games that tend to have the lowest or most shallow roleplaying?
It's pure combat all the time.
Pure combat. It's the dungeon crawls.
Yeah.
And I'm not... Yes, I know there's exceptions. Somebody's going to write me and say, well, I had this dungeon crawl, da-da-da-da-da. Okay. I know. There are exceptions. But overall, you walk into a con, and on this side of the room is 10 tables of dungeon crawl, and on this side of the room is 10 tables of people where they're in the town talking to nobility. I guarantee you which side has the most RP.
Right.
And it's the same reason you can't roleplay in most MMOs. I'm going to throw out one other thing I actually thought of just sitting here, which is... When we play a role-playing game, and this is true of most people, you tend to find a group of people who are similar-minded, and between you, you come up with sort of a culture for your group. For example, you get people together, and this guy likes role-playing a certain way, and that guy likes role-playing a certain way, and they're probably fairly similar to begin with if they're friends, but then between them, they kind of hash out this middle ground of game. When you are on an MMO, you are sitting around with thousands of people you did not pick and you did not know.
Right.
And I saw this that, for example, we tried to RP a little bit on an EverQuest server. And it got annoying because what really generally happened was everyone had their idea of what a good RP was.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody would conform to it. And it was made worse by the fact that there were people on there trying to RP who were terrible RPers.
Yeah.
Who just had no concept how to do it, but would not stop.
Yeah.
And you could not create a game that was even roughly, I'm not talking an elitist thing here, it's got to be just way X. I'm talking you couldn't even land in the same alphabet as way
X. Well, we had that problem too when we were playing WoW. We tried to do it on a on an RP server, and we even had a guild up. We had several people in it. Oh, yeah. We even had rules and a story and stuff, and everybody had good characters. Problem was, it was just different things with the UI. It was like we were role-playing over guild chat. I was in the forest, so-and-so was in a swamp, another person was 100 miles away in the city, yet we could all communicate with this mental link. And it's just like, so do you only role-play in says? And people were role-playing in the general channel. You know, the zone-wide general channel. Suddenly everybody in the world had this mental link. And then other people were like, don't role-play in the general channel. And then other people were like, okay, I'm looking for somebody to help me with this quest. You're not role-playing. You need to role-play.
Yeah, there needs to be consensus on that. I think in the original EQ role-play server for Onia V, they took out the zone-wide channels and forget global channels. They didn't exist yet.
Well, you still got a lot of crap, though. Like, their idea of role-playing in Ixar was anytime you had to hit the letter S, you hit it six times. Yeah. Hey. I need some help with this. Like, that's role-playing.
I ran an XR Gill in EQ2 for months, and I jammed my S's like hell.
Or it's like, you know,
well, it's the dwarves.
You're level 12. You want to start a level 12 group. But it's not in character.
12 seasons!
I am 12 seasons or
more.
Freaking please. You know, this is not role-play. This is, all you've done is done a find and replace on certain terms in your vocabulary. Levels became seasons, and you're 12 seasons. What, you're 3 years old? I mean, is that what you're telling me?
What is your AIM client? Oops, I mean Pigeon. Everyone has a messenger Pigeon. It just happens to be made by AOL.
Right. I think you hit it right on the head when you said the real problem with these games, the reason you can roleplay in Muds and Mushes, and the reason you can't roleplay in an MMO, is the viability of progress from beginning of the game to the end of the game without ever killing a single anything.
Yes, well, combat totally drains your mental resources.
They tried to get around this kind of an EQ to, because originally, in the original take of the game, they had a tradesman class, but even then, how did you get the stuff for the trade skills? You had to go kill stuff. And even when you were killing stuff, you had to go out into areas populated by dangerous mobs to gather them.
Yeah.
It was not a viable non-combat character. You couldn't sit around and decorate homes and throw festivals and things like that and gain levels from it.
Yeah. Well, I think what it ultimately stems from is that Muds, Mushes, Mucks, all that sort of stuff, was designed for role-playing and had a combat element. MMOs are designed for combat and levels and equipment stuff, and the role-playing is an afterthought.
This would be a huge tirade out of the scope of this podcast, but I take exception to the fact that most computer so-called RPGs today call themselves RPGs. You don't play a role.
Yeah.
You play a stat sheet.
To me, Legend of Zelda is not a role-playing game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a combat puzzle solver.
I would say even Final Fantasy is really not a role-playing game. However, I would say something like Elder Scrolls is a role-playing game.
Yep.
I'd
agree with that.
You know, so I'm sorry, WoW's not a role-playing game.
No, it's not.
It's an MMO. It's a massively multiplayer online game. It's not an MMORPG. Mm-hmm. But
now, these things have stories to them.
Right.
And you interact with the story.
And you play a character, something you could call the character your role.
Backdoor Sluts 9 depth stories. Naughty Nurses 7.
I'm going to wrap this episode up before I have to teach.
Video killed the storyline. I'm sorry, go on.
All right.
God. That was awful. End this episode now.
I am. I'm jumping ship. All hands abandon ship. We will catch you next time.
See you later, John.
I'll see you.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.